movie night. Quentin was pleased when they returned from the wedding, and Solange did not seek him out with her usual 20,000 demanding questions. He went for a ride with Tim, something they hadn't done in months, and felt even better as Tim chatted happily about his subjects and professors, and speculated on when his wizard cousin might appear. He did think it rather odd when she didn't show up for dinner. "It's your mother," he snapped at Rosie, who was listening to her iPod with a dreamy expression on her face. "Put that bloody thing away when you're at the table. It's fucking rude." Apparently, Rosie did not like being interrupted from her daydream.
"You mean you don't know where she is?"
she replied in a voice dripping with sarcasm.
"She told you. I guess you ignored her like you always do, because you're the worst husband in the world."
She turned her iPod back on.
"Obviously, if I knew, I wouldn't ask you," he barked out. "And she didn't tell me."
"She went to Marie's,"
Rosie replied with a self-satisfied air,
"for a week, unless the baby's coming, and then I'm supposed to call her. And she did tell you. I was sitting in the room."
Quentin could not think of a satisfactory reply to this pronouncement, so he merely scowled and stomped away from the table. As soon as he was well out of the dining room door, however, he started smiling. This, he thought cheerfully, is going to be a fucking excellent week. The first 2 days were blissfully peaceful, especially since he did not receive the angry phone call, in which she enumerated all the reasons she wanted to get the hell away from him he had been expecting. The third day was too cold to ride. He'd finished his latest book, had nothing in particular he felt like painting, and sent Lupin and Elizabeth, who had postponed a honeymoon for obvious reasons, an owl inviting them to the Leaky Cauldron for dinner. He was quite annoyed when a note appeared on his desk informing him Teddy had gone to his grandmother's, and they were having some sort of cozy time to themselves. "That means he's got his head shoved 3 feet up her ass," Quentin thought irritably. "But that fucker's reading her books and fluffing her pillows and bringing her takeout and staring at her all damn day long. Asshole. And I hope you heard me." The fourth day, he thought he might possibly like to see Solange, and perhaps apologize for being somewhat of an ass the last few months, even though she hadn't exactly been wonderful herself. Although she did spend the whole bloody summer trying to cheer me up before the shrieking began, not that I ever showed her any appreciation for it. "Fine, if I'd treated her better this summer, maybe she wouldn't be so irritable now. We'll do a deal then. I'll take the blame, and she'll stop the shrieking." This, he decided, was quite a satisfactory and logical conclusion to the matter. The fifth day, he looked longingly at the charcoal sketch he'd done of her in Paris, and decided he would definitely apologize and follow her around the shops all day if she wanted. He was so irritable and restless, he actually took a nap, something he never did unless he was ill, just to make the time go by more quickly. This was rather unsuccessful, since he spent 3 hours dreaming about her in various romantic encounters, where she looked as adorable and sexy as the first time he'd seen her. "I haven't talked to her in forever," he thought disconsolately as he went downstairs for dinner. "Well, she's been talking, but I haven't exactly been listening. Maybe that's why she feels she needs to shriek. I don't even know if she's finished her book of poetry translations, or if she ever even got a contract for it." Dinner was a complete hash.
"Are you sick or something?"
Rosie snapped after 10 minutes had passed. 10 minutes in which he'd completely ignored 3 very excellent opportunities for shouting. Kenny's loud insistence that Oxford owed him an education, since he'd been living in England for 20 years. Lady Fanshawe's triumphant remark that Quentin must be proud he'd successfully run Solange off for a week. And Jamie's furious muttering about that stupid damn werewolf who'd apparently called an order meeting and ruined his plans for a date with Ginny.
"I'm sick of you," Quentin retorted, and Rosie picked up her plate and haughtily announced she was eating in her bedroom.
After dinner, he sent Solange a text message saying he missed her, and then stayed in his study so no one would see him checking his phone every 10 minutes. When 2 hours had passed without reply, he started pacing around the room, and after another hour, sat down in his armchair and shut his eyes, trying to decide just exactly how this had gotten so fucked up. "Don't you realize she's just been nervous? Haven't you ever acted badly yourself? Do you not have any compassion at all? Good God," he thought crossly, "now I've got him in my head. When was he saying all that shite? Oh yeah, the wedding, when I said she was always hysterical." He scowled at the fireplace, since it was something in his office that reminded him of Lupin. "There isn't any reason for her to be nervous now. She's got every damn thing she wants. Well, except for her little boy going off to school in Scotland. And her sister leaving. And her parents splitting up. And the definite possibility that she might go to jail. And the fact that her husband's a bloody asshole who doesn't give a shit about any of it and tells her every day to quit bothering him. Fuck! I haven't anything to wear, Neville thought frantically as he paced around his kitchen. I need some of those weird blue pants Elizabeth makes Remus wear all the time. That's what muggle women like. We're going to that muggle mole, he told Trevor decisively as he snatched him up, and Trevor gave him a disbelieving stare. We are, he continued stubbornly. We'll just stop by Gringotts and get some muggle money. Trevor did not appear at all surprised when Neville put him back down again. They never apparated anywhere without Neville forgetting at least three things. I can't wear this cloak, he moaned and stomped over to the wardrobe by the entranceway. Alice, who was watering a fern, gave him a questioning look.
It's red, Mother. Muggles hate colors, he told her gloomily. They hate them. Remus told me it. I mean, they're okay if you wear like one piece of color with something black, but you better not put a bunch of colors together unless they match. I don't know what matches. I've got to wear my black, he said resolutely and picked Trevor up again. Wait, he groaned and put him back down. Got to stop at Gringotts, remember to get the muggle money? It's cold. My ears are going to freeze off.
He rummaged through the wardrobe again and pulled out a thick black balaclava and scarf, which he wrapped around his face until only his eyes were showing. When he picked Trevor up for the third time, Trevor let out a great sigh.
Hang on, he shouted. I've got to stop by the blacksmith's and get my sword sharpened, remember? Remus told us to do it all after the battle, and I keep forgetting.
He grumbled and hurried off to the bedroom, returning with his phoenix sword swinging by his side. He picked Trevor up yet again, and this time Alice and Trevor exchanged conspiratorial glances behind his back.
Wait, he hollered and practically flung Trevor onto the table. Forgot the fire whiskey. That's what Remus told me to bring to this moving party, whatever it is, he told Alice when she gave him a puzzled look. See, Rosie, she's that girl I brought over, remember, that I like? It's at her house, and she invited me, but she lives with a dad, and he reminds me of Snape, so I figured I should bring something he likes, and he's Remus's friend. Don't ask me why. He told me fire whiskey.
Alice smiled at this long-winded explanation. I guess I don't make him nervous anymore, she thought to herself. Neville, who had been quite anxious about what he'd say to his mother when she first moved in, now gave her long-winded explanations about everything, describing his day over dinner with lengthy and detailed stories, complete with voices and gestures that reminded Alice of Lupin. I guess he's getting caught up, she thought sadly, from all the years he hadn't any parents to talk to. Neville retrieved a large paper sack and two bottles of Ogden's finest fire whiskey and set those on the table.
Now, let's make sure we've got everything, he told Trevor sternly, as if Trevor were responsible for all the items he'd forgotten in the past. Sword, bag, me wands and me cloak. Oh, yeah, and you.
Trevor croaked loudly.
What? It's everything!
Trevor appeared singularly unimpressed as Neville picked up the paper bag, left the fire whiskey on the table, and shouted for Diagon Alley.
Don't let me forget, Neville told Trevor as he walked briskly up the cobblestone street, to go to Bartholomew's first. He can sharpen the sword and keep it while we're at the bank. And we're not stopping at the magical menagerie, he said threateningly as Trevor started squirming in his pocket. The last time we did that red cat almost ate you.
Oh no, he yelled suddenly and came to a screeching halt.
Elizabeth said they bought one of those red cats. What was he thinking? A cat's gonna eat you for sure, he informed Trevor darkly.
He let out a sigh, and greatly preoccupied with thoughts of the loathsome new feline Lupin had acquired, stomped right past the blacksmith shop and up the wide white marble stairs of the bank. There was, as usual, a large crowd, although he was pleased they weren't crowding him as they usually did. When Neville entered the bank, he heard the sound of scurrying feet and glanced up just in time to catch a glimpse of his reflection on the shiny tiled floors, the long black cloak on his 6'3" frame, his black boots and scarf wrapped around his face, the long and dangerous-looking phoenix sword swinging at his side, and the empty paper bag in his hand.
Oh no! He yelled at Trevor, and 15 goblins, 6 security wizards, and 2 trolls piled on him at once.
Bring that bell for tea, will you?
Lupin asked Quentin in a demanding tone from the couch in the great room, where he sat with Elizabeth and 3 of her favorite pillows, each artfully arranged so that neither her back nor her ribs would hurt.
Suppose you can't move your arms, Quentin replied irritably.
Elizabeth is comfortable, Lupin said obstinately. I'm not moving. Ring the damn bell.
You're getting a bit mouthy, Quentin raised an eyebrow at Elizabeth. What's happened to your pet werewolf's bloody manners?
She sighed and rolled her eyes at him.
It's the blue moon, she told him in a long, suffering voice. Please ring the bell.
Quentin scowled, but rang the bell.
That was only for Elizabeth, he told Lupin nastily. And what the hell is the blue moon?
Every few years, there are 13 full moons in a year,
Elizabeth said in a practical voice.
The 13th one is called the Blue Moon. It makes him worse. And it's in 3 days.
What? Quentin put the bell down and glared at them both. You never told me about this, he said accusingly to Lupin. I don't think he can be worse, he added to Elizabeth.
I don't think so either,
Elizabeth replied.
But that's what he says. He spent all day yesterday apologizing to me in advance and begging me not to get mad at him.
Lupin gave Quentin an angelic smile, and Quentin thought to himself, this was probably not a good sign. Neville raised his aching head a few inches and saw 15 goblins surrounding him with wands pointed in his direction. Disapparate, he thought frantically. Surrounded! Disapparate! He quickly discovered, however, his wand was gone as well as his sword, and Trevor was not in his pocket. Where's my toad? He shouted angrily. Give me back my wand! The goblins moved in menacingly.
You won't need your wand or your toad in your Azkaban,
the ugliest one sneered.
Attempted robbery. 20 years!
Apparently, this was Neville's trial and sentencing, because the goblin then shouted for the security wizards to take him away. Wait! Neville yelled wildly. I just came to get some muggle money!
Doesn't matter,
snapped the ugly goblin scornfully.
You brought a dangerous weapon into this bank. That's a phoenix sword,
he announced triumphantly.
10 years just for bringing that sword in here.
Akio sword! Neville shouted and leapt to his feet, deciding he'd much rather die fighting than go to Azkaban. The sword zoomed into his hand and he dropped himself face first on the tile floor, which caused all of the goblin's stupefying spells, aimed at where he'd been standing, to hit each other instead. Akio wand! He screamed as the goblins toppled over and put up a shield charm only seconds before the 6 security wizards started blasting curses in his direction. The trolls, who were apparently rather cowardly, thundered off down the hall. Get back here! One of the wizards screamed as Neville conjured up his crawling vines, which wrapped themselves around the wizard's waist and arms, effectively rendering their wands useless, and pulled them all together into a tightly woven clump. Neville jumped up and regarded the scene exultantly, especially when Trevor shot up out of one of the wizard's pockets and bounded back over to his side.
You're going to Azkaban for life now!
One of the wizards shouted furiously, just as Kingsley Shacklebolt and 3 guards, one of them the scowling Barkley fellow from the Order Party, strode into the bank.
All right then, Neville, Kingsley said calmly, as if they were passing one another in the street.
Get out your wand, Minister!
Screamed one of the wizards from his ball of humans and vines.
He's a dangerous criminal!
Shacklebolt smiled at this. They thought I was trying to rob the bank, Neville yelled out desperately. They all jumped me and said I was going to Azkaban! Well, Kingsley bellowed over to the tangled ball of wizards, now rolling about in tandem on the floor.
Who is responsible for this? Attacking an order member with no just cause?
He had his sword,
one of them squeaked out.
And he's all dressed in black and he had a paper bag and those goblins jumped on him first,
another yelled, pointing towards the stupefied goblins.
It's against the law to bring a weapon in the bank,
squealed a third in a frightened voice.
If you were familiar with the law, Kingsley said very coldly, you would know there is an exception for aurors and members of the Order of the Phoenix. I sent Longbottom here myself to investigate rumors about treachery within the ranks.
All of the wizards began babbling apologies instantly, but Kingsley gave them such a fearsome glare they rolled themselves hastily down the hall and careened right down the front steps into the street.
Seeing as the fellow I was here to meet with is stupefied, Kingsley announced in an uninterested voice, glancing at the large, ugly goblin, I suppose I'll return later. Neville, if you will.
Neville hurried out of the building with his cheeks burning.
Thanks, he said with a look of intense gratitude. Thanks. I'm really sorry. Kingsley
waved him off impatiently.
Those goblins getting a bit too paranoid for my taste, he barked out crossly. This little incident will give me a nice excuse to threaten them with a wizard-run bank.
Neville let out a great sigh of relief. Oh no, he said suddenly. I've got to get some muggle money. That's why I was going in there in the first place.
Barkley!
Kingsley shouted, and the sullen fellow stepped forward and gave Neville a look of loathing. Apparently he remembered him from the Order Party as well.
Give Longbottom some muggle money. £50.
The man protested defiantly.
I know you've got it, Kingsley snapped. You've always got a stash for that greedy shrew of a muggle wife you've got. Hand it over.
Barkley flung the bills at Neville, who snatched them up happily.
I'll pay you back honest, he told Barkley, who let out a great snort of disgust and turned his back on him. Nice job with those goblins and security wizards, though, Kingsley said thoughtfully to Neville. Impressive, really.
He turned away, and Neville started beaming so broadly his cheeks hurt.
When Neville yelled out, Kensington Mall! He apparated into a food court, jam-packed with rude and noisy muggles, who were pushing each other and giving him incredulous looks. The first store he strolled by sold toys, and he made a wide berth of the hundreds of shrieking children. The next three offered household goods, holiday decor, and women's clothing that Neville imagined was meant for prostitutes. Well, they haven't a nocturne alley, he reasoned. I guess they have the bad places in with the good. That's probably why they've got all these security officers hanging about.
Can you believe he said that? Neville told Trevor happily. Really? Can you believe it? He said, impressive, really. That's what he said.
One of the nice things about having a toad, he thought, was you could brag to it all you wanted.
He told me something I did was impressive. That's what he said, he repeated as Trevor gave him an approving croak and hopped up on his shoulder. The Minister of Magic, he added.
The muggles, however, had all begun staring at him now, some of them actually backing away or snatching up their children in alarm.
What's wrong with these muggles? He said hotly to Trevor. Honestly, I'm not doing anything. I just
lurking around, dressed in black, wearing a sword and talking to a toad.
Lupin hissed in his ear, and Neville jumped about 5 feet in the air.
Stop that, he shouted. I hate it when you sneak up on me. Don't do that.
Lupin disappeared and promptly reappeared 3 inches in front of him.
Stop that right now,
Neville yelled and leapt back, and the crowd of muggles started making a stampede for the exits.
You sound like Elizabeth,
Lupin replied with a wicked smile.
You're getting me all hot and bothered.
Shut it, Neville answered solemnly. What's wrong with you? You never bother me before a full moon.
I'm entertaining myself,
Lupin replied unrepentantly.
What are you about? Rosie's on your trail, and I've been sent to collect you, he added. Elizabeth can't take her whining anymore.
Neville smiled at this.
I'm shopping, he replied happily, for that moving night thing.
Right,
Lupin grinned.
Moving night. They have it every year, you know. They love watching that moving. Anyway, I'll shop with you. I'm quite an expert on muggle men's clothing. If Elizabeth doesn't buy me new clothes once a week, she'll stop breathing.
You're going to behave,
Neville replied as if he were speaking to one of his second years, and Lupin gave him an offended look.
Why are you asking me that?
He replied and pointed at Barton's.
We'll go in there. They like that store.
It wasn't until they actually got in the store that Neville realized Lupin had never answered his question.
May I help you with something?
A tall woman in a brown tweed suit asked them shrilly as Lupin carelessly rummaged through a pile of neatly folded shirts.
What does this concern you?
He replied promptly, and Neville sighed.
What?
Don't mind him, Neville told her quickly. He's just, it's like the wrong time of the month.
She gave them a very strange look, and then a knowing smile.
Oh, I see,
she smiled.
He's your boyfriend. Oh, that's pretty funny.
Neville stared at her in speechless horror, but Lupin started smiling.
He goes on about that because I am meant to be the woman here,
he told the sales lady seriously.
I don't say it's fair, do you?
Well,
the woman mused while Neville started thinking frantically of where he might disapparate to.
He shouldn't say it if you don't like it.
She gave Neville a severe look. I don't even believe this, Neville thought resentfully. He's acting like an idiot, and I'm the bad guy? He never gets this awful before full moon. It's a blue moon. Oh, no. Everybody warned me.
I've got to get him in some better clothing,
Lupin whispered loudly with a tragic glance in Neville's direction.
I mean, look at this disaster. All that black he's wearing, and his hair's tied back, this strip from a plant leaf.
He shuddered with an effeminate wave of his hand.
It's so embarrassing. He fancies himself some sort of gardener. Thinks he knows a bit about plants.
Neville gave Lupin an extremely nasty look that he completely ignored.
Casual or formal?
The sales lady asked Lupin sympathetically.
Casual. Jeans, shirts, hoodies. What's new in then?
He replied and started wandering around various tables of clothing.
He's completely clueless. It's quite awful. One can't even imagine. We need to choose for him.
You do not,
Neville replied hotly and snatched up a pair of black tapered denim jeans.
Oh, no, no,
Lupin shook his head sorrowfully.
That's cut for an old fellow. You want these loose-fitting blue jeans.
The sales lady nodded her agreement, and Neville resisted the urge to make a rude hand gesture at the pair of them.
Try these,
Lupin tossed him a pair of jeans.
Shall I help you get them on, then?
He smirked.
No, none of that,
smiled the sales lady and wagged her finger teasingly. No, Neville shouted, snatched up the jeans, and raced for the dressing rooms, promptly tripping over a stool piled high with magazines.
He's dead clumsy, Lupin sighed, but tells me he have great hair. God, I love his hair.
He intoned dramatically and gave Neville an ardent look. Stop! Neville yelled furiously and threw the jeans on the floor. An interested crowd began gathering around.
What's the matter?
Lupin said forlornly.
Why are you upset with me?
He put on a heart-rending face.
I'm going to kill you!
Neville hissed.
I am going to kill you!
The saleswoman frowned harshly at Neville.
Now what does he do? She demanded. If he were my boyfriend, I'd treat him better than that.
That's awfully nice of you, Lupin replied gravely. I always go for the bad boys, then they treat me like shite. Something to do with my self-esteem, is what my therapist says. My mother never cared for me.
He stared sadly down at the floor, and the sales lady gave him a very compassionate look.
I do that too, she said conspiratorially. He's not worth it. That's what you've got to tell yourself.
She crossed her arms and gave Neville a baleful stare, and Lupin jumped behind her back and made a gleeful face at him.
I'm gonna kill you, Neville shouted,
and with a leap knocked him right to the floor.
Stop! Stop!
Screeched the saleswoman, and the crowd buzzed happily. Lupin sprawled out on his back and started laughing, and this infuriated Neville so much he took a swing at him.
I love it when you play rough. It's so great,
he told Neville fervently, and everyone in the store burst out laughing again.
I'm never speaking to you again, Neville hollered as he leapt up. Never! Never, ever, ever!
He stormed wrathfully out of the store, but not before he heard Lupin saying,
I've really got to give him up. It's so hard.
In a pitiful voice. Rosie was quite taken aback when she answered the door and found Neville not, as she imagined he would be, stammering nervously, but glowering angrily instead.
What?
She said curiously and stepped back a few feet.
Get in, then. What's the matter?
See here,
Neville yelled, and Rosie gave him a thoroughly confused look.
Is who here?
Remus Lupin,
he snarled in a malevolent tone, as if he were hissing out the name of a particularly loathsome Death Eater, and began craning his head in all directions.
No,
Rosie replied in a bewildered voice.
Elizabeth sent him to the mall to get us something. Why are you so mad?
Never mind, he replied threateningly. I mean, sorry, I just... Well, I don't even want to talk about it. And I forgot the fire whiskey, he blurted out in a disgusted voice. This has been the worst afternoon ever.
Then it can only get better,
Rosie replied sweetly and gave him a smile. Neville looked at her low-cut pink satin blouse, form-fitting black velvet pants, artfully swept-up hair and huge brown eyes, and decided this might be true. She was right, he thought happily. 2 hours later, they were ensconced on a love seat by the fireplace, sipping wine while Rosie smiled coyly and flirted outrageously with him. Quentin sat in an armchair beside them, drinking scotch and talking to Elizabeth about nothing in particular, which seemed rather odd to Neville, although he couldn't remember why. And Elizabeth kept loudly announcing Lupin was in big trouble because he'd been gone for so long. When he finally apparated into the den of the mansion, she immediately threw a shoe at him. Ha ha, Neville thought smugly. That's what you get.
Where have you been?
Elizabeth yelled.
Helping Neville shop, he replied quickly. You told me to go find him so Rosie would quit whining.
Rosie gave him a furious look.
Neville is right here, Elizabeth wailed. And he said you weren't even with him 10 minutes. What have you been doing?
Lupin gave Neville a menacing look, and Neville smiled complacently in return and flipped him off.
I was just walking round the mall, he said desperately. Neville was aggravating me, and you know I have to go walk to calm down. Honestly, I wasn't doing anything.
Quentin thought he looked about as believable as George Weasley when he made this statement. You are so fucked, he thought cheerfully to himself.
That is fine, Elizabeth replied in a hurt voice. But you could have told me or sent me a note. I was worried.
What? Quentin yelled. What? You're falling for this shit?
Apparently she was, since she let him sit down next to her and kiss her.
Sorry, he told her sadly. I was looking for more Christmas presents for you, he added,
and Quentin and Neville exchanged a thoroughly disgusted look.
He could have sent you a note, Neville told Elizabeth seriously. It doesn't take him 10 seconds to send out those notes. It's like he wasn't even thinking about you at all, he finished with satisfaction and sat back exultantly on the couch.
Quentin put his feet up on an ottoman and pulled out a cigar to better enjoy the entertainment. Elizabeth burst into tears. Lupin sprang across the coffee table at Neville, and Rosie let out an ear-splitting shriek and flew over to Elizabeth's couch. Apparently a wise decision, since Neville and Lupin promptly toppled the love seat onto the floor with a crash. Neville was stronger, but Lupin was quicker, which made for a rather amusing sideshow as they snatched up each other's wands and yelled spells out until Lupin stared at Neville and he disappeared with a loud crack.
"Well, that's not fair," Rosie yelled. "You operate him back here right this minute."
"No,"
Lupin replied as solemnly as a 3-year-old.
"I don't want to."
"Where is he?"
she screeched furiously.
"Where I sent him,"
he replied insolently, and pulled out a large raw steak from his cloak pocket, which he began chewing on without benefit of utensils.
"Apparently he was shopping for your Christmas presents at the steakhouse," Quentin commented to Elizabeth,
who had her arms folded across her chest and a very aggravated expression on her face.
"Ew!" Rosie screeched and jumped to her feet. "That is disgusting! Elizabeth, make him stop!"
Lupin, however, had swallowed the last bite and made a great show of licking his fingers while staring straight at Rosie.
"Meat and blood,"
he told her in an ominously satisfied voice.
"Nothing like it."
"He's crazy and he's going to make me puke," Rosie wailed. "What is wrong with him?"
"Leave Rosie alone," Elizabeth said angrily, "and get a plate and utensils and sit at the table when you eat."
"So apparently he actually is worse," Quentin said to Elizabeth in an agreeable tone.
"Apparently,"
she replied irritably.
"Now I know why he kept apologizing to me yesterday." "I'm really sorry,"
Lupin said repentantly and pulled Elizabeth onto his lap.
"Here, let's fix your pillows."
She nestled down and looked content.
"What?"
Rosie shrieked.
"You're giving it up already? You stay mad a lot longer than that."
"I can't stay mad at him,"
Elizabeth sighed.
"He's too cute, and he's always so sweet to me. I just love him."
She put her head down in his chest and sighed, and Lupin gave Quentin an awful smirk. "Oh my God," Quentin shouted at Elizabeth. "That is the most sickening pile of shit you've ever said. I'd rather hear you call me a great overgrown dog. He's put you under the imperious curse."
"No, he hasn't,"
Elizabeth replied stubbornly and started giggling as Lupin tried to slide his hands under her breasts.
"Women find me irresistible,"
Lupin told Quentin cheerfully.
"She can't help it. Damn, you look like Severus. Spot on. Perfect."
Quentin was fixing him with a murderous look. "Where in the hell is Neville?" Quentin barked out, and Lupin smiled at him mysteriously.
"Where I sent him,"
he repeated.
"It's not like that bit with Kenny. He can bring himself back, you know."
The point was proved when Neville apparated into the room, sopping wet and shaking furiously.
"He's cold," Rosie wailed. "Look, he's shaking. He's freezing."
"I'm not shaking because I'm cold," Neville shouted wildly and advanced on Lupin. "I'm shaking because I'm mad. I'm mad as crap. You're a motherfucking piece of shit. And as soon as Elizabeth gets out of the way, I'm going to blast you to pieces."
Quentin looked impressed.
"Where in the hell did he send you?"
he asked him with interest.
"Hagrid's bathtub," Neville screamed, and Lupin and Elizabeth both broke out laughing.
"Sorry,"
Elizabeth said quickly.
"It's just funny, Neville. And it was a bathtub. How bad can that be?"
"Hagrid was in it," Neville roared with a deranged look on his face. "I landed right in his lap. I'm never going to forget seeing that as long as I live. This blue moon shit fucking sucks."
"Wow,"
Rosie said appreciatively.
"I've never heard you swear. You've said like 10 swear words in the last 5 minutes.
"You can't help it,"
Elizabeth said loudly to Neville as Lupin kept laughing until tears ran down his face.
"He told you yesterday he was really sorry and everybody should just stay away from him. He even wanted to shut himself up so he didn't make anybody mad. And he hates to be shut up,"
she yelled accusingly. Neville gave Elizabeth and then Quentin an incredulous look.
"This is the same shit I got after he tried to kill me in that fucking graveyard," Quentin told Neville impatiently. "I don't know how in the hell he got her like this. I'm gonna puke on the fucking floor. I liked her better when she was a hateful bitch."
"He couldn't help it," Elizabeth shouted at Quentin. "All of you leave him alone. And quit glaring at me," she said threateningly to Neville. "Quit bothering Neville," Rosie shrieked. "Just because you think everything your weird werewolf boyfriend does is just great doesn't mean everybody else does." "You be quiet," Elizabeth snapped back. "And he's not my boyfriend. We're married." "Maybe you are and maybe you're not," Rosie screeched.
Lupin ignored all of this and began staring at Elizabeth fervently while he whispered in his ear.
"He's begging you to shag him," Neville said nastily.
He was so angry he forgot all about being embarrassed in front of Rosie.
"That's what he's doing. I know it. She's going to give in."
Lupin grinned at him, and he and Elizabeth disappeared with a crack. Neville glared furiously at the empty love seat, and Rosie patted his arm soothingly.
Maybe you can put something in his wolf's bane, she said brightly. You know, like something that'll give him spots or turn his hair pink.
Neville smiled at this. Yeah, that's pretty tempting. But he did warn me yesterday. So did everybody else, he finished gloomily. Everybody. Got an owl from everyone in the order, and 13 people I don't even know. Quentin made an impatient noise, apparently had lost interest in the subject. Isn't your mother coming back for the movie? He demanded and glared at Rosie, who smiled very smugly in return.
Maybe,
she responded airily.
Why don't you call and ask her?
Quentin wasn't about to inform her she wouldn't answer his calls. I really don't give a damn, he barked out and strode off.
Well,
Park said in his disapproving voice when he walked into Quentin's bedroom. Apparently he was well aware Solange wasn't there.
Where's Miss Solange?
None of your fucking business, Quentin replied and turned rudely away from him.
I suppose she's come to her senses, Parks replied stiffly. It was only a matter of time.
He started hanging up some shirts in the closet.
What the fuck's wrong with you? Quentin shouted. Whose side are you on here? You've only worked for me for 25 damn years. Yes, I work for you, Parks replied coldly and strode out of the closet. And before that, I worked for your father. The past few months has been rather difficult to tell the difference.
Quentin couldn't have been more stunned if Parks had put a gun to his head, and he sat down on the bed with his ears ringing.
What do you mean? He replied finally, in a different sort of voice. I mean, Parks regarded him with a frightful look, that you treat your wife exactly the same way your father does your mother.
He stalked out of the room. It took Quentin a few moments to realize he wasn't breathing. There is no fucking way that's true, he told himself numbly. He felt as if he'd just stepped off a ledge and fallen much farther than expected. Right, because Parks doesn't know you at all, and he didn't live with your father for 15 years. He looked up desperately at the charcoal drawing of Solange with her sweetly provocative expression and thought of their wedding, where she'd kept giving him the same look. What the hell have I done? Is there anyone on this bloody planet that's more of an asshole than me? Fuck! That old bastard was right. I would have been a Slytherin. Rosie pulled Neville onto a love seat in the theater and smiled when he looked awed at the size of the screen. Say something, he thought desperately, but his mind apparently was completely devoid of information.
Is that where the moving's going to be?
He finally stammered out.
The what?
Rosie gave him a strange look.
Oh, it's not a moving, it's a movie.
She looked down quickly and stifled a laugh. I hate him, Neville thought angrily. Rosie folded her hands in her lap and put on a demure and expectant expression, and Neville felt quite sure his cheeks were on fire. Well, now what do I say? He thought desperately. Usually she talks a lot. She really needs to start talking. She really, really needs to start talking. She seemed to be waiting for him to speak, however, or to do something. Okay, okay, Neville thought despairingly. What am I supposed to do now? Think of something to say. Think, think.
Kind of robbed the bank today, he blurted out.
You did what?
Rosie yelled. I mean, I didn't really. I mean, well, I thought I did, but I didn't. And I stupefied these goblins, and Shacklebolt came in, and
his voice trailed off.
Okay.
Rosie gave him another puzzled look, but decided the most important matter was that they were alone. She leaned over towards him and rather obviously parted her lips.
The movie doesn't start for an hour, she whispered. We could operate up to my room.
Right, Neville thought frantically, and I know what's going to happen up there. I'll embarrass myself to death, and she'll think I'm pathetic and tell all the muggles, and they'll laugh about it at that dinner table.
Yeah, I'm gonna go wash up for dinner, he said in a frightened voice and jumped to his feet.
Rosie stared at him incredulously until he had exited the room, and then leapt up herself, livid with rage. That is it, she thought furiously. That is it! I'm not wasting one more minute of my life chasing his ass. I can have anybody I want, and he sucks. He's just a stupid, weird wizard that killed some dumb snake and keeps a frog in his pocket, and that's all he is. She was not the slightest bit amused when her grandmother flew through the door, laughing hysterically and doing wheelies with the terrified Reginald clutching the armrests of his wheelchair. Help! Reginald croaked desperately as they flew past her, his head tilted almost back to the floor.
Help me!
Grandmother, stop! You're gonna flip him out of that chair! Rosie yelled,
but Caroline just ignored her and kept right on circling around the room. Kenny trotted in and happily flopped on one of the beanbag cushions, pulling a handful of pills and a joint out of his pocket. He beamed as Caroline zoomed past him with Reginald tilted back in the wheelchair, a look of mortal panic on his pasty, mummified face.
Cool! Kenny yelled. Man,
I want to do that next. Let me push super old dude around, man.
I'll push you around, Lady Fanshawe shrieked maniacally as she made another loop around the room.
Nah, super old dude's having fun, man.
Kenny shrugged as Reginald waved at him in terror, his lips moving soundlessly. Jamie and Ginny were next to appear, holding hands and looking pleased with themselves, and Rosie glared at them fiercely.
Scott, you to stop, Jamie said rudely.
Whee! Lady Fanshawe squealed as she gleefully ran the wheelchair over Jamie's foot.
Grandmother, stop it! You're gonna hurt him!
He shouted and made a lunge for the chair, but Caroline just leapt right past him.
What's the matter with you?
Rosie and Ginny rolled their eyes at each other, and Rosie gestured for Ginny to sit beside her.
I've had it with Neville, she hissed furiously. I'm not chasing anybody. You fuck himself. Neville always does this with girls,
Ginny replied matter-of-factly and sighed.
Leave Ginny alone, Jamie called out insolently from the back of the theater. Come back here, Ginny.
Shut up,
Rosie yelled at her brother.
Shut up, she's talking to me.
Maybe she wants to talk to me, Jamie shouted back.
You're both acting stupid, Ginny said sternly. I can't split myself in two. Well, I can, but I'm not going to. It sucks to be splinched.
Fine, Rosie snapped.
Go sit with him then. Who cares if I don't have anybody to sit with? Not that I want to sit with Neville, because I don't ever want to sit with Neville. He can go bury himself in his potting soil and rot there,
she finished dramatically, and Ginny sighed again. When Neville re-entered the room, a Christmas carol had already started, and he did a quick survey of the inhabitants, noting Ginny on the back couch glaring at Jamie. Quentin sitting by himself and looking so thunderously Snape-like, Neville was surprised he hadn't a cauldron on his lap. Richard, cheerfully ensconced between a glowering Marlena and a viciously smirking Lady Fanshawe, Reginald's wheelchair parked beside her, and Kenny, who had apparently developed a fondness for super old dude, cackling on an orange beanbag at Reginald's feet. Henry and Victor were sprawled on the remaining beanbags, singing songs with what Neville suspected were very vulgar muggle expressions, and he looked quickly away from the love seat where Lupin appeared to have Elizabeth pinned under a blanket. He sat down next to Rosie with some trepidation, and she scooted herself as far away from him as possible.
"What should I do?" he whispered in a bewildered voice. "I just went to the bathroom."
"Leave me alone!" Rosie shouted back. "Go sit somewhere else!"
Neville was horrified by this directive. There was obviously nowhere else to sit, unless he wanted to be on a love seat with Quentin and relive all of his happy potions class memories, wedge himself between Ginny and Jamie, who were obviously having some sort of argument, or sit on the armrest of the love seat where Lupin was trying to do God only knew what with Elizabeth. The beanbags were taken, and the old people couch was full. I guess she wants me to sit on the floor, Neville thought furiously, or on super old Muggle's lap in his wheelchair. I hate her. She invites me over here and then makes me feel like a total idiot. Fine, he told Rosie loudly and stood up, but since he had no idea at all where to go, continued standing, feeling more awkward and infuriated with each passing moment. There was a slapping sound from the back couch.
The fucking hut! Jamie screamed in an outraged voice.
I told you! Ginny yelled back. I told you I could kick your ass, you cowardly muggle fucker!
I say, I want to watch this movie, you know!
Richard bellowed as Lady Fanshawe reached out and pinched Marlena right on one of her nipples. Marlena recoiled in horror and let out a scream that seemed to reverberate through everyone's heads.
All you bloody fuckers, shut the hell up! Quentin shouted. Watch the damn movie! Show some motherfucking Christmas spirit!
Lupin looked up from under the blanket.
We're already full of Christmas cheer, he announced contentedly. Well, I am, anyway.
Bully for you, Jamie replied curtly.
You're all awfully grouchy,
Lupin looked around the room.
Maybe you're sitting with the wrong people. Perhaps you should mix it up,
he added pleasantly.
We're all related, Jamie barked out furiously. I'm not sitting with my sister or my grandmother, and Ginny's not sitting with Neville.
Neville's not sitting anywhere, Neville thought to himself heatedly as he leaned against the wall.
Nowhere at all. I could sit with Neville if I wanted,
Ginny squealed and leapt to her feet.
Neville's my friend. We were best friends when we were 7th years,
she added threateningly.
Weren't we, Neville?
Yeah, we were, Neville replied sullenly as Rosie gave him a deathly look. We were. Best friends.
Go and sit with her then, Rosie shrieked. Go on. I'd rather sit with my grandpa than you. I'd rather sit with Jamie than you. I'd rather sit with that bloody werewolf than you.
Fine, Neville yelled. Fine. What do you want to sit with him? And you said he was crazy and he made you sick, he snarled.
Lupin started grinning. You bloody fucker, Quentin thought sourly. You're just trying to stir this shit up. And it's working.
At least he puts out,
Rosie screeched, and the whole room looked at Neville and burst out laughing. If I could use a killing curse and not go to Azkaban, Neville thought to himself wrathfully, she would be one dead muggle.
That's rather obvious, Henry commented from the floor. I do not just put out,
Lupin replied in an offended tone.
Elizabeth had to beg me.
I did not, Elizabeth screamed in a horrified voice as she sat up. I did not! Don't you dare say that!
Well, maybe you didn't beg me,
Lupin replied cheerfully.
But you asked me. You did. You asked me to do it.
Elizabeth was so angry she could not even speak.
Not so adorable now, is he? Quentin said to her nastily. Lucky for him, he's just too cute, and you can't stay mad at him.
She pretended not to hear this.
Well, I hope you enjoyed it, she hissed to Lupin in an ominous voice, because it's the last time you're ever getting any from me.
I didn't mean it,
Lupin replied quickly.
I was just joking around.
Elizabeth did not reply.
Honestly, I was kidding,
he announced desperately and looked around the room.
I mean, well, she did ask me, but she didn't beg me.
Quit saying that, Elizabeth screamed. I did not ask you. You volunteered. I did not ask you.
You volunteered? Quentin looked at Lupin and couldn't help laughing. Was she rounding up recruits? Did Percy get in the queue?
Was there a sign-up sheet on your door? Henry asked agreeably, and Kenny snickered loudly.
Too bad. I guess I missed it.
You shut up! Elizabeth wailed, her face flushed furiously. Neville yelled angrily at Henry and glared at Lupin, who was just sitting there looking amused.
What if I won't? Henry replied insolently.
Can you do nonverbal spells? He added condescendingly, and there was more laughter from the muggles. Henry flipped up in the air backwards and landed on the floor with a resounding crash.
I guess he can, Ginny called out triumphantly from the back. You stupid muggle fuckers, you don't know who you're messing with.
What's wrong, big wizard dude? Kenny called out snidely to Neville. Apparently neither Ginny's words nor the fact that Henry lay unconscious on the floor had made an impression on him.
You didn't get to sign up either, man?
What about you, super old dude? He asked politely to Reginald.
You get any of it, man?
Reginald, however, had his eyes closed, and appeared to be wishing he were anywhere else on Earth except for where he was. Neville was pleased when Lupin quit looking amused, and leapt on Kenny with a snarl, whipping his wand out of his pocket before it even landed on top of him.
Help!
Kenny yelled piteously as Lupin slammed into the ground and put his wand to his throat.
Help me, dudes!
The plea met with no response at all. Apparently, there was less interest in helping Kenny than finding out what would happen if they didn't.
Do it all verbally, Remus! Ginny yelled out from the back. Don't say it out loud!
I've already done it,
Lupin hissed in a positively serpentine tone.
What's that mean, dude?
Kenny screamed in terror.
What did you do to me, man?
Lupin released Kenny and stood up looking satisfied.
Neville,
he said in his professor's voice,
did I ever tell you how the dick curse got started?
Ginny let out a shriek of laughter, and Kenny jumped to his feet with an expression of mortal panic on his bald, freckled face.
Yeah, Neville replied in a delighted voice. James made it up when they had this professor that used to tell Remus werewolves weren't as smart as real people. That's why he was a hash at potions, he told the rest of the room.
Slughorn, Lupin said it thoughtfully. That was excellent. Awfully good of James. I wonder if it ever grew back.
He started back towards Elizabeth's love seat.
Don't you dare sit by me. You go sit somewhere else,
Elizabeth yelled threateningly.
If you can find anyone who'll sit with you. Good luck with that,
she added nastily.
Oh, we can burn on the werewolf,
Rosie screamed delightedly. Kenny unzipped his jeans, looked down at his filthy boxers, and let out a torturous, high-pitched wail of agony.
Put it back, dude,
he shrieked desperately.
Damn, dude, put it back.
Maybe Tim will put it back for you,
Lupin told Kenny spitefully,
when he's back from Alex's next week.
He can't fix anything back, man,
Kenny shrieked frantically.
And where the hell is it, dude?
I guess you'll find out,
Lupin replied cheerfully, and ambled over to where Neville stood awkwardly against the wall.
Let's go somewhere we can sit down, Neville. These muggles are rude as hell.
Yeah, Neville said hotly and gave Rosie a furious look. Let's go. And where the hell is this bloody dick?
Quentin shouted.
That's sick as shit. You think I want that motherfucker's dick somewhere in my damn house?
I can't say as I remember.
Lupin yawned impolitely.
Perhaps you've need of a treasure hunt.
He and Neville both laughed nastily at this, and Quentin jumped to his feet and stormed furiously in their direction. When they vanished with a loud crack, he stomped out the door and slammed it shut.
Well, Richard announced loudly, I'm glad that codswallop is done with. Now we can watch the movie.
He sat back down and started happily munching on buttered popcorn.
Movie?
Movie!
Kenny screamed and started dancing around desperately.
I've got to find my dick, man! Who's going to help me look for it, dudes?
For the first time since the movie had started, there was silence in the room. Quentin sat on one of the dining room chairs by the pulled back velvet curtain, watching the sun spread its last rays of gold over the darkening sky, and listened to the wind whistle through the dying leaves outside. The time, he thought, didn't just crawl, it dragged along painfully like a wounded animal. He was quite certain he'd been waiting for several hours, whether the clock said 20 minutes or not. When he finally heard a key in the door, his mouth went completely dry, and he felt nauseated. She's got to forgive me, he thought frantically. She has to. I don't know what I'll do if she doesn't.
Aren't you watching the movie?
Solange said politely as she took off her pink wool coat. She had her hair back in a loose ponytail and wore a white sweatshirt with a couple of bright green words printed in French across the bosom, her curve-hugging jeans and tall pink fur-trimmed snow boots.
You look rather cute, Quentin said when he found his voice.
How in the hell is she so adorable, and when did I stop noticing?
I was waiting for you to come back,
he finished lamely and stood up.
Oh,
Solange looked distracted and a bit nervous as she put down her bags.
I told Rose you and I'd get here.
He walked over close enough to smell the light scent of her perfume, and was seized with a desperate longing to hold her in his arms. But there seemed to be some sort of invisible wall between them. It's like she's put up a shield charm, he thought bitterly, and who could blame her?
I'm very sorry, he said and looked down at her intently. But I've been such an incredible ass. I don't even know what to say.
Solange looked rather bewildered at this.
Well,
she paused.
I've been yelling at you a lot, too.
Not until after you'd spent all summer trying to make me feel better, he replied roughly. When I wasn't concerned at all about what you were going through and treated you like shit. Nobody's going to put up with that forever.
I guess that's so,
she sighed and twisted a strand of golden blonde hair around her finger.
Anyway, it's okay. That's just how you are.
You're not angry?
She shook her head and did not look at him. This isn't good, he thought frantically. This is not good at all.
No, I'm not mad. I got over it when I was gone. Can we talk later? I'm really tired.
She gave him an exhausted and pleading look.
Sure. And
I tell Jamie not to stammer.
What?
She started looking anxious.
What is it? Is something wrong?
You aren't angry, he said slowly. Because you don't love me anymore. You've given it up.
Solange sat down on the couch and put her head in her hands for a moment. And when she glanced up, she gave him the most dreadful look he could have possibly imagined. Compassionate and somewhat pitying.
I'm sorry,
she said quietly.
I didn't think this would really bother you. I kind of thought you'd be relieved.
What?
He couldn't finish the sentence.
I just kind of realized it all of a sudden, I guess. I spent a lot of time walking around thinking.
This is not happening, he thought. It's not. The room was spinning.
You wanted a second chance,
she said defensively, apparently misinterpreting his silence as anger.
That's what you wanted. I gave you one. I'm tired of getting my heart broken.
And I'm not getting a third chance.
It wasn't a question.
No,
she replied simply.
I would have done, but I can't say as I feel the same anymore. I'm sorry you push people away and make yourself unhappy. I know you don't really mean it. I just can't try anymore. I don't even want to. I'm sorry.
Stop saying that,
he said gruffly and put his hand on the hearth to steady himself.
I'm the one who's sorry. I'm a fucking sorry bastard who's never deserved you. Even Parks has figured up I'm a bad job.
Parks?
Solange looked worried at this.
I doubt that.
Ask him, he said bitterly. Something he should have done a long time ago. You want a divorce?
Solange seemed rather startled at this sudden query.
Not unless you do,
she replied quietly.
I'm 39 years old, Quentin. I don't want to go running round bars looking for men. I don't want my children supporting me.
Well, they won't be. I'll give you anything you want.
I want him to have a family to come home to,
she said, and tears sprang up in her eyes.
This house has always been his home. You think he'll want to come visit just me in some apartment when he can go home to the place he grew up in, with the people he grew up with?
when he can go to his godfather's house. Her voice trailed off.
That's fine, Quentin replied and tried to keep his voice steady. Tell me what you want me to do. Anything.
I just want us to get along, she said simply, and not shout at each other, and maybe be friends. That's all I want.
Friends.
The word hung in the air, a live, malevolent presence, and Quentin suddenly realized he felt much worse than when he'd faced the Dementors.
I can do that, he said quietly. Whatever you want. It's long past time I started thinking about what makes you happy.
He turned away, so she would not see his eyes glinting with unshed tears.
Are you okay?
She said apprehensively, and put her hand on his arm in the manner of a close friend, rather as Lupin would have done.
Friends. Breathe, damn it. Sure.
She turned and went down the hall, and her absence from the room was like a physical blow. You broke her heart. She doesn't love you. The air seemed to have left the room, and he walked quickly outside into the bitter cold, but found he still couldn't catch his breath. Neville and Lupin appeared on the cobblestone street of Hogsmeade, the light from the pubs glinting through frosty window panes and sewing patchwork squares of color on the street below. The high street was cheerful and Christmassy, with multicolored stars hanging in the sky above the stores, golden green garland wrapped around lamp posts, enchanted candles trimmed with red and white lights hanging in the tree boughs, and singing from brightly dressed groups of carolers that strolled merrily through the crowds.
Look here, Lupin told Neville reassuringly as they walked along. Don't get all worked up over this.
I hate her, Neville spat out venomously. I mean, that sounds awful, but I hate her. Making me stand up and look like a great lemon. And I haven't done anything and...
You don't have to explain it to me, Lupin said impatiently. She was bang out of order. Anyway, she said wicked burn on the werewolf. Rude as hell.
Thank you, Neville replied indignantly, and then let out a great gloomy sigh.
Anyway, cheer up. I've got an idea,
Lupin told him as they made their way through a group of loudly singing inebriated carolers. Good, Neville mumbled sulkily as Lupin started fishing around in his cloak pocket.
Here, he announced. It's your Christmas present.
Neville watched as he unscrewed the top of a small bottle and handed it to him. And when he looked inside, a few large drops of molten gold liquid leapt to the surface and bubbled.
Cool, Neville said happily. Felix Felicis! I've always wanted some of that!
If anybody needs it, it's you, Lupin replied. It lasts about 12 hours. Just take a few drops, though. Too much will make you
giddy and reckless and dangerously overconfident, Neville recited. Yeah, I've read about it. You shouldn't have done it, he told him sternly. This stuff's really expensive.
I got a very good Christmas bonus, Lupin
said smugly, and Neville smiled.
That's because you're the Ministry's whore, he told him in a practical voice, and Lupin burst out laughing. And you danced with Shacklebolt.
See what I go through for you? Try it out.
Neville looked into the bottle and hesitated for a moment. So what, he thought defiantly. Maybe I want to feel happy and confident for once in my life. Besides, he rationalized quickly, this is a really great present. I want him to know I appreciate it. He tossed back half the bottle in one gulp and grinned sheepishly at Lupin.
That was very wrong of you, he said delightedly. Very, very wrong. Excellent. You're getting another present.
He waved up a small red flag with the gold cross and the emblems of the stag, wolf, rat, and dog in the corners.
Marauder flag, he said proudly and poked it behind Neville's ear, where the banner waved beside his eye. I'm making you an honorary marauder for the night.
Brilliant! Neville beamed as a great surge of elation swept over him. Thanks! You're the greatest friend I ever had, he proclaimed loudly, apparently completely forgetting the events of the afternoon. Who needs those stupid muggles? We can do anything we want.
Sure we can.
Lupin appeared quite satisfied with Neville's change of demeanor.
Let's go to Aberforth's and...
This was a rather unnecessary statement, since they were already walking up to the front door of the Hogshead Inn. But both came to a screeching halt and stared disbelievingly at a large, grease-spattered, handwritten sign tacked up on the door.
Due to the blue moon, there will be no werewolves allowed here tonight. This means you, Remus Lupin. If you blast this door in, I'll owl Shacklebolt and have you arrested for destroying my property. Aberforth Dumbledore.
The hell's that?
Shouted Lupin and kicked the doormat.
The bloody fuck does he think he's messing with?
A small group of men who were walking towards the door stopped and turned back hastily in the other direction.
Yeah, he sucks, Neville hollered loudly. It's totally rude to write your name up there where everybody can see it.
Lupin glared fiercely at the door.
Why did he underline no werewolves?
He yelled out, and the door burst into flames.
Spone! Neville yelled quickly, and the fire went out. Reparo, look, you can't be using fiend fire. They'll know it's you. We'll find another way to get that stinky old goat man. We can do whatever we want.
Lupin appeared to be mulling this over.
We can. We're in the Order. I killed Nagini, and you're the greatest Auror ever.
This is true,
Lupin replied thoughtfully and turned away from the door.
Let's go down to the Screaming Banshee and figure it up,
he added cheerfully, and Neville gave a vociferous nod. They had barely rounded the corner onto Nocturne Alley when a very hairy and foul-smelling man with abnormally long arms and a black hooded cloak leapt out in front of them.
Give me your money, he snarled threateningly as he pointed his wand in their direction. And I won't hurt you.
Neville and Lupin looked at each other and burst out laughing.
What?
Lupin said in a strangled tone.
Bloody fuck! What was it then? I didn't quite get it the first time, he added.
Yeah, Neville blurted out importunately. Say it again. I said, give me your money,
the man yelled and jabbed his wand a few inches from Lupin's nose.
Maybe you won't get hurt. Do you hear me?
He shouted when his words failed to obtain the desired reaction.
I did,
Lupin hissed conspiratorially.
Shh, don't tell anybody. I don't know what to do. I'm too frightened.
He and Neville started laughing so hard they hung on each other's shoulders.
Are you drunk? Screamed the man in outrage. Now I'm going to kill you both.
Holy shit.
Lupin fell down on his knees in the snow, doubled over with mirth, and Neville laughed until tears ran down his face.
I need to come here more often,
Lupin wheezed to Neville.
This is damned entertaining. He's gonna kill us,
he repeated, and they both laughed until they were gasping for air.
Shut up,
the man yelled, apparently beginning to feel rather humiliated, and pushed his wand up to Lupin's nose.
Avada!
Lupin gave him an insolent look, and his wand flew out of his hand and bounced harmlessly down the street. The man yelled in fury and tried to punch him, and when Lupin jumped to the side with a gleeful expression, he turned and spat right in Neville's face. Neville and Lupin whipped out their wands at once, apparently in a frighteningly quick and professional manner, because the fellow turned rather pale and started backing away.
I kill venomous yew!
Neville, who was livid, thought he'd throw some venomous yew leaves on this bastard's face, but apparently Lupin was even angrier than he was.
Confringio!
He shouted, and they thrust out their wands. Unfortunately, at exactly the same moment. Thousands of sheep began blasting out of the sky like enormous bleeding cloud turds with hooves.
What the?
Lupin yelled up a shield charm above their heads, and as the sheep fell on it, they bounced off into the street.
Yew leaves!
Lupin shouted and began laughing uncontrollably.
He wanted yew leaves, Neville, not yews.
I couldn't get the rest of it out, and you said Confringio. That's what made them all explode out of the sky!
Neville screamed back excitedly.
There's like a million of them!
Holy fuck!
Lupin laughed until he could no longer speak, and the huge herd of fallen sheep righted themselves and charged around the corner with furious expressions.
What are those sheep so pissed about?
Neville yelled delightedly as they raced after the bleeding herd.
The sheep are mad as crap!
Venomous ewes!
They skidded to a halt and flung themselves behind a bench as Aberforth rushed angrily out into the street, and Lupin put his head on Neville's shoulder and nearly cried with hilarity.
You wanted venomous yew leaves, and you conjured up venomous yews!
They both yelled with laughter. The herd stormed madly into the crowd, scattering shoppers and crashing right through the Hogshead storefront. A few moments later, the small flock of goats joined the herd, apparently delighted to be rescued from their pen. Aberforth raised his wand wildly in the air just before he was knocked to the ground by an errant sheep, and a blast of gold sparks shot up into the night sky.
He's called a FLE,
Lupin choked out.
Ha! Neville replied jubilantly. We are rank magical law enforcement. They can't do anything to us.
Yeah, let them give it a go,
Lupin replied smugly.
We'll blast those fuckers right off the street.
Despite these brave proclamations, neither moved from behind the bench, although they kept looking over it and laughing, as a couple dozen blue-cloaked officers with gold badges apparated in front of the hog's head. The herd thundered into Scrivenshaft's quill shop, and Neville noticed one of the goats had a piece of a cloak dangling from one horn, and a woman's pointed hat skewered on the other.
We're gonna get arrested!
Neville screamed joyfully.
I already got arrested once today!
This is a fucking awesome day,
Lupin agreed enthusiastically.
Bloody awesome. Those sodding sheep are pissed as hell.
Quentin found Solange already asleep. or pretending to be, when he went upstairs, so he put on his bathrobe and wandered into his study, glancing around at all the dementors, demons, and graveyards he'd painted lately. God, I'm a cheerful fucker. I don't know why she isn't crazy about me. Every nasty word he'd said to her in the past few months, and there were quite a few of them, kept replaying through his head, so loudly he knew sleep was impossible, and he paced around his studio until 5, when he imagined he could go down for a cup of coffee without causing gossip from the servants. He was quite displeased to see Elizabeth curled up on one of the couches by the fire with a quilt wrapped around her legs. "I can never be alone in this bloody house," he thought irritably. "And why the hell is she up anyway?" It was sleeting with a vengeance, a pelting drumming that beat ferociously and blurred water drops down the long window panes. How appropriate. I'd like to fucking drown myself. He walked impatiently over to where she sat and frowned when she glanced up briefly. "Was that a bloody werewolf?" he barked out. He knew she'd been crying.
"I don't know," she whispered miserably. "I haven't any idea. He hasn't even sent me a note."
It was only, he thought, because he had an inkling of what she was feeling, that he sat down on the armchair beside her.
"Look," he said sternly, "this will all be over within a couple of days, and then he'll be whining about what a terrible person he is. We'll tell him he's got that one right," he said bitterly.
"The one time I desperately need to talk to that asshole." Elizabeth tried to smile at this.
"I guess it's stupid," she said in a small voice. "But he never acts like he doesn't care how I feel, and he never goes anywhere without telling me. Not even before full moon. And I'm worried that he hasn't written me because he's dead,"
she added direly.
"He's with Neville," Quentin replied shortly. "Nobody can kill those two bastards. It's the only luck either of them have, staying alive."
"Well, I guess that's so,"
Elizabeth seemed reassured.
"How are you?"
she added quickly and looked away. "Ah, so she knows, and she's concerned, but she'll respect my privacy, because she's a private person herself."
"About as full of Christmas cheer as you are," he replied and rang for some coffee. "The difference is, no matter what that bloody werewolf does when he's being Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, he's crazy about you. Whereas in my case..."
Lucretia stuck her head in the door, and a frown creased her features.
"What are you two doing up talking to each other?" she said suspiciously. "Something going on?"
Elizabeth was pointedly silent.
"Not a thing," Quentin replied pleasantly and strolled back to the table. "Elizabeth's left with me since that bloody werewolf won't get his ass out of bed."
"Huh," Lucretia snorted. "He's the laziest person ever. Can't get him off for nothing."
"He's not," Elizabeth said threateningly. "He stays up late. He can't help it. He's nocturnal."
"You don't have to tell us what he is," Lucretia sniffed. "He'd try to eat us for dinner."
"I think you'd make 2 dinners,"
Elizabeth snapped, and Quentin couldn't help smiling at this.
"That's fine, that's fine. You just make fun of us big girls. You ain't so little yourself."
Lucretia went back into the kitchen, grumbling darkly.
"I'm going to bed,"
Elizabeth said wearily.
"Will you please... I mean, don't say anything about..."
"I know nothing," Quentin replied dispassionately.
"Solange would have something to say about it,"
Elizabeth frowned.
"He wants to talk to her after this stupid blue moon and try to patch things up."
"He'll do it," Quentin said impassively. "He's not done anything wrong in the first place. He's too fucking nice for her to stay mad at him. I, on the other hand, have botched things up irrevocably."
He looked back at the dark window panes and the huge droplets of water that beat against them.
"Maybe,"
Elizabeth replied pensively and gathered up her quilt.
"But I've never known you to be one to give up, Quentin."
He stood and politely helped her to her feet, and she gave him a small smile and went off down the hall. This is getting worse and worse, Quentin thought grimly. Elizabeth feels sorry for me. Elizabeth! And I'm not even pissed off at her anymore. Hell, I kind of like her. I have reached the nadir of my entire existence. The Hogshead, by now full of broken liquor bottles, burst into flames, and Neville and Lupin cheered wildly as Aberforth screamed and stomped around in the street like a madman. The sheep had carried their path of destruction through Scriven Shafts and Dervish and Bangs, and was now headed towards Honeydukes.
"You know what?" Neville told Lupin happily. "I'm gonna go back there and tell her how awful she was to me. Yeah, then she'll apologize, and then we're gonna do it," he declared triumphantly.
"No, you aren't," Lupin replied agreeably. "She'll beat the shit out of you."
"She will not," Neville screamed accusingly. "I'm telling you, this is a great idea."
You're fucked up on Felix Felicis, Lupin told him unconcernedly. It's a terrible idea. It's probably the worst idea you've had in your whole entire life.
What do you know? Neville yelled angrily and disapparated with a bang. Lupin blew a few blue smoke rings, changed them into the shape of sheep, and grinned to himself. Exactly 14 and a half minutes later, Neville reappeared, with two black eyes, a broken nose, 7 scratches on his face that resembled slashes from a sword, and several bloody gashes to his head.
"She shag you?" Lupin demanded and toppled over laughing. "Kind of a quickie, wasn't it?"
"No," Neville replied determinedly and broke into a delighted grin. "She wants to, though. I know it. But I told her I don't even want to shag her anymore, because she's the biggest muggle bitch on the planet," he finished exultantly.
"Oh my god!"
Lupin started rolling around in the ground.
"You actually told her that?"
"Yes," Neville beamed proudly. "It's exactly what I said." He then embarked upon an extremely lengthy recitation of how pleased he was with himself, how incredibly lucky Rosie was to have gotten to snog him in the first place, and just how desperately he knew she really wanted him.
"Be quiet,"
Lupin snapped irritably after about 25 minutes of nonstop verbiage.
"You're getting on my nerves. Shut the hell up."
"No, I'm telling you, she's really, really lucky that somebody like me, who killed the snake and saved the world from Voldemort, ever snogged her."
"And Dormiendo,"
Lupin yelled impatiently, and Neville slumped over and started snoring.
"Neville,"
Lupin shook his shoulder.
"Wake up, you're drooling on my cloak."
Neville was sprawled out face down in the snow, using Lupin's rolled up cloak as a pillow, and sat up feeling rather disoriented in the bright morning sun. He had absolutely no idea why he was lying behind a bench in front of some unrecognizable street. Dozens of sticky-faced children were dancing gleefully as they tossed large sugar quills, round sherbet balls, multicolored lollipops, and other assorted magical candies to one another, and now and then they would snatch up one of the many socks that were strewn about and play hand puppet. Hundreds of owls, from great grays to tiny scops, twittered around hooting while quills of all shapes and sizes blew gracefully in the wind. Sneakoscopes, remembrals, time turners, invisibility boosters, and crystal balls rolled down the street, with the bellowing manager of Dervish and Bangs racing behind them, and an inordinate amount of pink confetti was raining everywhere like a ticker tape parade. Lupin got up to sit on the bench, leaving Neville to follow suit. "He doesn't seem too worried about where we are," Neville thought happily, as Lupin lit up his pipe and summoned some chocolate candy from the street, and he began surveying the street with some interest. In addition to the thousands of assorted candies, there were upended bar stools, shreds of lace tablecloths, torn rolls of parchment, bits of broken lanterns, shards of enchanted lights, various items of clothing, and clumps of green and gold garland littering the street. Several wizarding chess sets had broken open, and the pieces were angrily screaming as they dueled one another, causing more than one child to leap over them in alarm. The road was lined with tumbled-down storefronts and piles of smoking ash, and the smell of cinder, goat, perfume, owl dung, and alcohol was everywhere.
"Where are we?" Neville finally asked.
"Hogsmeade," Lupin replied cheerfully. "What's left of it, anyway? Want a sherbet bowl?"
"Yeah, sure."
Neville popped it into his mouth and pointed.
"Look at that!"
He gestured to a group of furious-looking witches and wizards clustered in the middle of the street, throwing their arms about and shouting loudly. Neville spotted the yellow silk robes of the Scrivenshaft's manager, and the frilly pink tweed of the batty old witch who owned Madame Puttyfoot's, the plump little dwarf that ran Glad Rags clothing, and the ugly one-eyed goblin who managed the Owlery post office. The proprietor of Honeyduke's sweet shop, a wheezing wizard in orange, was bellowing loudest of all, apparently at the children in the street, who were ignoring him completely. Madame Rosemurda was in the center of the group, with her hands on her hips and her curly gold hair blowing wildly in the wind, and when she glanced in their direction, she immediately turned and stomped towards them.
"Watch out," Neville told Lupin placidly. "We're in for it now."
Neville was quite pleased when Rosemurda stormed up, paid no attention to him whatsoever, and turned right on Lupin.
"Remus Lupin," she yelled, "look what you've done to this street. Look at our stores. You'll be paying every one of us back and rebuilding these storefronts and..."
"I didn't do it,"
Lupin said in an injured voice.
"It was the venomous yews."
He looked at Neville and they started laughing, and Rosemurda gave him a furious kick.
"All the pigeons are loose," she said ominously.
Lupin appeared rather alarmed at this, but only for a moment.
"See, that's a woman for you,"
he told Neville carelessly.
"Did I get her in trouble when she hired me for the summer after 6 years, so she could shag me? No, I did not. I kept her guilty secret.
Rose Myrta slapped him across the face. "I hired you to help me with this door," she shouted. "And you kept pretending you couldn't remember which room you were sleeping in."
"This is true," Lupin proffered his pipe. "But keep your hair on, will you? Have some hagash. It'll calm you down."
Rose Myrta slapped him again, but snatched up the pipe.
"Don't be telling me to keep my hair on, you clarity arse!"
she screamed, and Neville hastily scooted himself a few feet away, thinking to himself that Lupin was apparently attracted to very loud women.
"And if anyone wanted it hushed up, it was you! Someone was a bloody prefect and didn't want to lose his badge, and someone didn't want his mom to find out!"
she finished with a yell. Neville gave Lupin a gleeful look. "Didn't want your mom to find out," he said delightedly, and looked back at Rose Myrta.
"Did you get in trouble? I don't think the stores are supposed to shag the students at Hogwarts," he said seriously. "Nobody's supposed to shag the students, especially if they're underage. They'll send you to Azkaban," he added knowingly. "See," Lupin told her insolently, "I saved you from Azkaban. I could have told Albus how you molested me."
Rose Myrta started yelling for the pigeons, and Lupin jumped up.
"Maybe we'd better go," he told Neville quickly.
"I think not," a stern voice announced threateningly, and when they turned around, a senior MLE officer thrust a rolled-up parchment into Lupin's hand. He glanced at it with a bored expression, and Neville started reading over his shoulder. "From the Office of the Minister of Magic, the Minister of Magic, Kingsley Judson Shacklebolt, Al Post, Jeremus J. Lupin, Senior Oral, Captain Order of the Phoenix, and Neville M. Longbottom, Professor Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Get over to my office. Now, Kingsley."
"I think he's pissed,"
Lupin said thoughtfully and looked at the note again.
"Yeah, he's definitely pissed. What do you think it's about?"
"Who knows?" Neville replied carelessly. "Probably wants us to go and capture whoever he's pissed at. Because we're in the order," he added smugly.
"And he saw I took out that whole security force at Gringotts. Yeah, he did."
Neville was delighted to visit the Minister of Magic's office, which he'd never seen before, and beamed as he admired the crystal chandeliers on the high ceilings, the buttercream yellow walls with their intricate crown molding, the carved hand-painted giltwood mirrors, apparently Kingsley favored French Renaissance, and the gleaming massive library table. Kingsley, however, did not appear the slightest bit pleased to see them.
"Scott, you wound up,"
Lupin said irritably, as he flopped himself down on a Louis XV armchair of solid walnut, the fabric featuring a broad coat of arms that included a lion, a crown, and fleur-de-lis.
"We're too tired to go after whoever you're pissed at. Send somebody else,"
he added defiantly. Neville kept looking happily around the office and started humming to himself, and Kingsley gripped the edges of his desk.
"What the hell is wrong with you two?"
he bellowed so loudly the whole office shook.
"And why the fuck do you have pink confetti in your hair?"
he shouted at Lupin.
"Madame Puddyfoot's, I guess,"
he yawned as he shook some of it out onto the rich burgundy fabric, highlighted with blue, red, and gold.
"You know she has that shit everywhere. It got out into the street."
Kingsley was apparently so disgusted by this answer, he was unable to respond, and swung on Neville instead.
"You look like shit, Longbottom," he barked out. "Who jumped your ass?"
"I guess he's not calling me Neville anymore," he thought sulkily.
"Rosie," he scowled. "You know, she sang at his wedding."
"And can you not defend yourself against a muggle girl?"
he shouted, and Neville winced.
"She was really, really mad," he replied defensively. "Really mad."
Kingsley closed his eyes for a moment.
"You do realize you're a wizard, don't you?"
he finally said in a tired voice.
"Yes," Neville hollered out defiantly. "But I kept trying to tell her how lucky she was, and I knew she really wanted it. She wouldn't listen."
Kingsley closed his eyes again.
"Would you two like to hear the report I've got here?"
he boomed out when he opened them, his voice echoing around the room.
"No, but save it for another day,"
Lupin replied cheerfully.
12 stores nearly destroyed, with over 10 million galleons in damages and lost merchandise,"
Shacklebolt bellowed and jumped to his feet.
13 persons injured, 2 old witches with nervous breakdowns, and half of Hogsmeade destroyed."
There was a long pause as he waited for their response.
"Sorry,"
Lupin shrugged.
"You are sorry,"
Kingsley replied ominously.
"You are sorry. That's all you've got to say?" "Well, I'm really not,"
Lupin replied carelessly.
"I'm just trying to be polite, since you're my boss or whatever. I actually don't give a shit."
He leaned back on the sofa and yawned.
"I'm not sorry either," Neville yelled. "It wasn't our fault."
Kingsley stomped around his office for a few moments, putting his hand in and out of his cloak pocket.
It's a blue moon,
he muttered and tried not to look at Lupin, who had just wiped some chocolate from his shirt sleeve onto the fabric of the chair.
It's a blue moon. He can't help it. He's your friend. You really don't want to kill him,
he repeated several times as he stormed around in a circle.
Are you done yet?
Lupin said insolently.
I've got to go home and get some sleep. You're getting on my nerves.
Kingsley stopped walking.
I don't give a damn if it's hot pink, cerulean blue, or fucking Slytherin green moon, he screamed. I will throw you through that wall without any magic, because I will enjoy it more that way.
Neville shuddered. Think about Elizabeth, he said quickly. Kingsley's tirade had actually shocked him sober. She'll be really upset if he's hurt. She's gonna have that baby any day. And Teddy. You know Teddy would cry his eyes out if his dad got really hurt. He would. You know he would. Kingsley gave him a sour look.
That was a rather good effort to save his ass, he snarled. I suppose you're right. Elizabeth would be quite upset, and I can't have Teddy crying.
He looked rather disturbed at this thought.
It's a blue moon. It isn't his fault, I suppose, he sighed grudgingly. You, on the other hand, what the hell is in your ear, Longbottom?
It's a flag, Neville replied sullenly. Marauder flag.
Good God, Kingsley bellowed. How incredibly stupid are you? And I suppose he started all this by saying he had an idea.
Well, Neville mumbled petulantly, I guess maybe he did.
And how many times have you been told it's never a good thing when Remus says he has an idea, Kingsley roared. And do you not realize if he sticks a marauder flag behind your ear, you're going to be his bitch for the night?
Lupin fell off his chair laughing.
It's the venomous ewes,
he snickered from his knees.
The venomous ewes! Neville conjured them up, so I said Confringo, and they all started falling out of the fucking sky. Sheep! Everywhere!
He started pounding on the floor with tears running down his face. I'm sending them both to Azkaban, Kingsley thought to himself.
Why in the hell were you conjuring up venomous ewes? He shouted at Neville. Those damned sheep destroy and have of Hogsmeade! Who do you think's going to pay for this shit?
The woman to be venomous you leaves, Neville hollered back frantically. You know, like I did in the battle at Malfoy Manor. You were there. Venomous you leaves. Oh, this fellow tried to kill us.
Who? Kingsley said immediately. Who tried to kill you?
A Death Eater?
No,
Lupin chirped in happily.
A damn dumb common criminal. He jumped out at us and said,
he broke out laughing again,
give us your money and you won't get hurt. It was bloody hilarious, he added. And then Neville kissed these mean-ass pissed-off sheep to start dropping out the sky.
He couldn't finish the sentence. Kingsley buried his head in his hands. Apparently he'd given up.
You realize, if you hadn't written on his damn sign, no one would have known who did this,
he barked at Lupin.
Aberforth would have suspected it, but he wouldn't have had any proof, you stupid motherfucking idiot!
Who? You wrote on his sign? Neville yelled angrily.
Yeah,
Lupin replied unremorsefully.
After I made you go to sleep!
Kingsley pulled out the grimy, fingerprint-spattered sign and held it up for Neville's perusal.
Due to the blue moon, there'll be no werewolves allowed here tonight. This means you, Remus Lupin, and if you blast this door, I'll have Shacklebolt and have you arrested for destroying my property.
This means you, Aberforth, and don't have a fuck with a marauder or the fellow who killed the snake. Happy Christmas, Remus and Neville.
What? Neville shouted and turned on Lupin. Why'd you put my name on there? But thanks a whole lot. I'm going to get sacked. We're going to go to Azkaban.
I wanted him to know,
Lupin replied stubbornly.
Shouldn't have written that shite about werewolves not being allowed.
It's against the anti-werewolf regulations, he announced triumphantly.
The ones you put into effect, he told Kingsley self-righteously. Us holding up the law. You know I can't stand rule breakers.
Longbottom, Kingsley bellowed.
Get the hell out of here. Get out, and I'm only letting you off because this damn idiot had obviously taken advantage of you.
No, he didn't, Neville yelled hotly. I'm not stupid. I know what I'm doing. I...
Run with it, Neville,
Lupin hissed under his breath.
Go.
Yeah, he made me do it, Neville said quickly and hurried out of the room.
Kingsley waited until Neville was out of range.
Honestly, Remus, he said wearily, please tell me you didn't purposefully conjure up those damned sheep and set them after Aberforth's inn. I did not.
Lupin looked offended.
Neville told you about the venomous ewes. I had nothing to do with those sheep flying out of the sky. Nothing,
he he added impertinently.
That inn was burned to the ground, Kingsley said suspiciously. Burned! I'll bet it wasn't fiend fire, though, was it?
Lupin replied pleasantly.
And you know if I'd started it, there would have been fiend fire. Maybe a fiend fire goat to chase Aberforth round his backyard.
He smiled at this thought. Kingsley sat back in his chair and scowled at him for at least 5 minutes.
You are damned lucky I like you, he barked. Damned lucky. And so's that son of a bitch Longbottom. You and Longbottom are worse than you and Sirius. I don't recall you two destroying a village, he added disgustedly. That I knew of, anyway.
Sirius and I never destroyed a village, Lupin replied haughtily.
We did blow up a train once, but there wasn't anybody in it,
he added cheerfully. And now Sirius's son has turned up and he's your godson, Kingsley snapped irritably.
What the hell am I going to do with him? Probably the same thing you do with me.
Let him get by with too much shit because he reminds me of Sirius.
Exactly,
Lupin replied and looked satisfied.
I'll never tell, though. I will take your guilty secret to the grave.
To the grave, he pronounced melodramatically.
Mine or yours, whichever comes first.
Good to know, Kingsley sighed. Anyway, the next blue moon, I am locking you up myself for 5 days.
Well, fair enough,
Lupin replied genially.
What about the sign, then? Can't let Minerva see that. She will fire him. Then I'll feel so guilty I'll kill myself. And then you won't have anyone to send after any queer, death-eating vampires,
he finished triumphantly. Don't think I don't know you're manipulating me, Kingsley spat out, and Lupin gave him a beatific smile.
You've a point, however. Longbottom's a bit naive, and I don't suppose he meant any harm. And the other Aurors are ugly fuckers, and there's a lot of gay vampires.
Lupin grinned at this.
I knew you always liked me best,
he said in a self-satisfied voice.
Get the hell out of my office,
Kingsley bellowed, and Lupin sprang up and hurried out the door. Kingsley shredded the sign and threw it in the fireplace. This won't look suspicious at all, he thought furiously. The damning evidence against one of my closest friends just happens to disappear while in my hands. The prophet's going to have my head on a platter. He sighed and picked up his stack of morning owls. Lupin went down to the food court for some breakfast and found Neville sitting at a floating table, chewing sullenly on a large pile of steamed zucchini.
What's up?
He said agreeably.
Don't seem to be too bothered about this business, Neville said reproachfully. Honestly, you almost got me in a shitload of trouble.
You conched up the ewes.
You wrote on the sign. That's what gave it away.
Kingsley tore up the sign,
Lupin told him happily and sat down.
I heard the paper ripping when I was getting on the lift.
Neville kept munching irritably on his zucchini.
Thought you'd at least feel guilty. Thought you'd be all broken up and swearing your marauding days were over, he said sullenly.
Lupin gave him an extremely offended look.
It takes more than 2 wars, 3 deaths, 1 betrayal, 12 years of false imprisonment, a bunch of pissed-off sheep, and the destruction of Hogsmeade to finish off the marauders,
he replied resentfully, and Neville smiled.
I rather enjoyed it anyway.
Well, I thought it was fun, too, Neville grinned. I did, but I don't think that Felix Felicis brought me much luck.
Are you kidding?
Lupin motioned for one of the elves to bring him a raw steak.
Shacklebolt did nothing to us. Nothing. We destroyed half of Hogsmeade. We didn't even get a bloody fine. He didn't even tell us we had to clean it up.
Yeah, I guess you're right, Neville said in a pleased voice. You know, though, he said thoughtfully as Lupin started chewing on his steak, this blue moon thing is really weird. It's like a totally different person or something. Use a fork and knife.
Sorry,
Lupin replied glibly and picked up some utensils.
It's not necessarily bad, Neville said in a practical voice. You are kind of funny, but also like a Weasley twin, and some conceited prat morphed into one incredibly arrogant and annoying person.
Lupin looked up from his steak.
You have just described Sirius Black,
he smiled.
How'd you put up with him? Neville blurted out. I mean, I know he was a good guy and all that, but how did you stand him?
Lupin stared at him, and the blue moon suddenly ceased to exist for a moment.
Don't you dare say that about a friend, you beak-nosed slimy git! Maybe it was all so damned unfair that he had to go through this shit every fucking month. It pissed me off. Wake up, Lupin! I wish you'd talk! We were friends with you because of who you were, Mooney. Before we knew about the wolf, after we knew about the wolf, didn't matter either way. And all of us, even Pete, loved you just as you were. You were the person I cared about most on this earth, you know.
Neville was horrified when he saw tears in Lupin's eyes.
Oh, well,
he replied finally.
I loved him, I suppose. Not in the slash sense, he added and made an attempt to smile.
Look, I'm sorry. I don't know why you put up with me, Neville said furiously. That was a horrible thing for me to say. He was your best mate and he's dead and I always blurt out some stupid shit and I'm always moaning about something and I've always got some stupid problem and I don't know why you listen to me all the time, he finished with a yell that rather startled the other breakfast diners. Lupin smiled at him.
Same reason, I imagine, he replied.
Neville walked over to one of the fountains and looked in the water for at least 10 minutes. When he turned around, Lupin was standing behind him chewing on the steak in his hands with blood dripping down his sleeve, and Neville knew the freak interlude of normal behavior was over.
What are you looking at that fountain for?
Lupin said interestedly.
Think we should put somebody in it? I can operate them in there.
Nobody's ever told me they loved me before, Neville thought to himself. Not even in a roundabout way like that.
Just like the fountains, he replied quietly. And I was thinking, I'm glad I'm done with Rosie. Gran humiliated me my whole life, and then I went to some girl who did the exact same thing.
So, you think you'll survive?
Lupin said cheerfully.
Yeah, Neville grinned. Definitely. With a little help from me friends.